Welcome to Empires, an Asian business podcast. I'm your producer, Guang Jin. Over the past episodes, we've delved into the rise of VNG, from its humble beginnings in a LAN shop to becoming the dominant mobile messenger in Vietnam. To deepen our understanding of VNG's impact across East and Southeast Asia, today we are joined by two guests, each bringing unique insights and perspectives on the topic. Our first guest is Nok, Deputy Editor, Vietnam, Dew Street, Asia.
My name is Ngoc Nguyen and I'm the Vietnam-based Deputy Editor at Dew Street Asia. Dew Street Asia is a media company under the Nikkei Group and we cover private equity, venture capital, and more broadly the private capital markets across Asia Pacific.
Nok will help us bring the local perspective of VNG and its many entities, including Zing News, Zalopay, and Tiki, which we did not talk about in detail during the podcast. Following Nok, we'll be hearing from Jeremy, an influential figure in the Southeast Asian startup space.
Hey, I'm Jeremy Au. I'm a VC and Chief of Staff with Monkso Ventures. We invest in pre-Series A and Series A across the region. I'm also the host of the Brave Southeast Asia Tech Podcast, the number one regional startup podcast with over 20,000 monthly listeners. And we cover resources, training, and events for founders and investors and startup operators across the region. You can find us at www.bravesea.com.
Jeremy's insights will help us understand VNG from the perspective as a Southeast Asian observer and its implications across the region. So, without further ado, let's dive into today's discussion, starting first with Nok.
I'm so excited to be here today to share my view on one of the most excited companies that we have here in Vietnam, which is VNG.
So we actually did a lot of research. We also asked a couple of people that are actually working in VNG and they shared with us like all of the different perspectives that they have, right? And that's how we built the entire story. But I'm curious though, is there a story that you know as a local about VNG that you think few foreigners would have heard about?
I think in this day and age, the stories are just out there, right? I want to say that a story that people wouldn't know about VNG, but maybe something that people would have a misperception about the companies, given the recent failure of startups and then big correction in the market. So I guess like people would tend to group them all together, but VNG is not a startup for just 3 to 5 years. It's been there for almost 2 decades. And they have generated a really solid business model. And I believe that now VNG is, they have to go beyond just gaining. And I think the share of income from other pillars of business, cloud business or fintech, will eventually increase. It wouldn't have to be tested though, because fintech is still losing a lot of money. And it's like fierce competition out there with Grab and with Momo, with the e-wallets and with the foreign players, right? And then for the moment, a short-term impact to VNG's reputation is the suspension of Zing News, which is revenues for the companies. Because actually Zing News here is really well thought of. People read it a lot and they would rely on the information and also the analysis and story coming out from the publication. But it's a pity that the government here decided to shut it down for several months. And I think that is going to deteriorate the reputation for VNG as the company is preparing for an IPO. Yeah, and also another down that the people would have is the long-term growth segment that VNG categorized in their IPO prospectus. So they are investing. So beside the cloud business, the other pocket of long-term growth for VNG is investing into other companies in the startup ecosystem in Vietnam. And that has not proven to be so successful, I would say, even though it takes a long-term view. But if we look at Tiki, if we look at Helio, the B2B e-commerce platform, we see that the company is on the public domain though, that VNG has recorded losses from these two investments. Funding Society is another investment that might be more positive, but I think the stake that VNG is holding in Funding Society is just too small to make an impact to the business. So that's just my view on the story, that I guess people would have to have a balanced view on the operations of VNG.
Thanks for sharing about Zing News as well, because when you start to learn about how long they've existed and how many different things they've experimented on, right? All of a sudden you realize, okay, there's so many things that they're associated with. Zing News, Zalopay, Tiki, and all of these peripheral aspects that they were involved. Unfortunately, we didn't have a lot of time to talk about it. So it was very touch and go. It was talked in the most briefest way possible. So actually, thanks for sharing about Zing News. Since we're on this topic, I thought it would be very interesting if you could share a little bit about Zalopay and Tiki. And could you share about what you mean by it hasn't seemed very successful and it seems very competitive? For context, all we did in the podcast is that we said this has been a cash burner, but that's all the audience knows. So maybe you could share some context to it.
Well, for Zalopay, I guess it's common that everyone knows that is fierce competition. I'm not sure internally how they are going to grow Zalopay further, but as a Vietnamese, I think we Vietnamese all expect Zalopay to get to the next level. For Tiki...
Could I ask? So, because I heard Zalopay's market share is third, it's not the top, but everyone expects Zalopay to be the top?
Yeah, because the Zalo platform, it has like tens of millions of users. And everyone would just don't know why VNG couldn't tap to that large pool of users to boost the market share of Zalopay. So that the questions only the companies can give us. Yeah, but that's the expectation that we all have.
And you were sharing about Tiki.
Yes, for Tiki, I think it's reinvest. So the VC world, the startup world, reinvest in a world that we believe it will come. So there's no crystal ball to make sure that we will come or not. I guess VNG was once the largest shareholder in Tiki, so they were betting on that e-commerce business to become a local champion. And there was even talks of merger with another local e-commerce platform, Sendal. But that didn't happen because of the significant growth of Shopee and Lazada here in Vietnam. I guess because I think everyone knows it, that both Shopee and Lazada, they are backed by single parent company. There was not like different vetoes when the board has to come up with a major decision. So that's easier for them to grow or to make decisions in terms of the expansion plan. So if that didn't happen for Tiki to some extent. And I guess in the first place, because Tiki also have the backing of JD, but even JD, they had to really exit the e-commerce business in certain markets in Southeast Asia. So it hints that the model somehow doesn't really work in this kind of competitive environment. So in the first place, Tiki was a 1P model, so one party partnership model, following the model of Amazon. But then I think they were tempted by the competition when every other was following the online marketplace, connecting merchant to merchant, merchant to users. So also Tiki in the end, they also follow that direction. And now they are working again so they actually have a launch of rebranding. And worse in the market was that they are trying to go back to the 1P model that they did before, to focus on that, and then to drive the income, the revenues from that kind of differentiation strategy. The play for Tiki is just something that you cannot foresee. right? Because of competition and also the amount of investment that they have to put in.
There's also conversations before that VNG Zalo was going to become a super app by integrating Tiki, integrating Zalo Pay and everything. Do you think that's still true?
I think the super app, it was the buzzword for, I think it was about 2 years ago. So even the e-wallet Momo, they also tried to reposition them as a super app. But we didn't see that really worked out in Vietnam. I guess because Vietnam is just a special market and it's not really easy to copycat the Chinese model and then just simply bring it here.
I agree. I know that we don't have much time left. Let's talk a little bit about their IPO. And also, they announced that they are going to have expansion plans outside of Vietnam. From my knowledge, I know that they've said this before. So why would this time be any different when VNG announced their expansion? And what do you think Southeast Asians outside of Vietnam can expect?
I think the implications of expansion for VNG is it has more meaning to itself rather than the other markets. Because, of course, as VNG is trying to expand to other Southeast Asian countries and also Latin American countries, so they will bring more options to those markets. So that would benefit the users and consumers there. But I think VNG is still not that significant brand name to really make a big difference in overseas market. It would take some time, I believe. It's not really a clear visibility that we can see it at the moment. But for the country, it means that they are trying to scale up and not limit themselves in their own turf or just gaming. This is gaming that they are expanding, but it still suggests that the company is positioned itself as a global company. And that would be really attractive to scaled investors. So there are a lot of debates of investors looking at Southeast Asia and they want either, so there was a debate of either a business should focus on their home market first or try to be a global business. So I guess they announced the expansion for several years ago. But now as the local market, even though it's big, it's 100 million population market, is still not supplied, still not enough for the size of VNG now. So for the size of VNG now, even though there's that speculation of 2 billion or 3 billion or even more, it requires larger markets to operate. So I think the implication is more for VNG than the other Southeast Asian market.
Interesting. I was also thinking that's probably the case. Thanks so much, Nok, for sharing the insights and also sharing the local perspective.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Now that we've gathered the local perspective from Nok, let's shift our focus. We are fortunate to have another expert voice to share the implications of VNG across the region. Here's our conversation with Jeremy. VNG has been a company that I think is very interesting. To many of our listeners, we've actually shared the entire story of VNG from when they started as a land shop to the game that they released, all the way to where they are now, whereby they invested a lot of money and some of it is questionable in terms of their investment. I saw this report about them, right, very long time ago. It said that this is the Tencent of Southeast Asia. Was that what people was thinking about them back then?
What's been interesting for many of these companies, actually, for Sea, for Tencent, for VNG, is that they often very much had a very strong foundation in gaming. And that's quite interesting if you think about it, because this is not something that really has happened in the US, right? If you look at US, you look at BioWare, you look at Blizzard, nobody's using games and then they build this e-commerce and payments platform and so forth. It's not a understandable first step. But if you take a step back and you look at economies of Southeast Asia, look at China, I think there's a lot more similarities, right? The first of all, of course, is really important is GDP per capita. You look at GDP per capita, it's actually at a much lower base compared to the US. And this is for China, this is still true for Vietnam, this is still true for Indonesia and across Southeast Asia. And so what that means actually is that there's actually a very also interesting demographically, a large, young, working adult or teenage base that is learning the internet, open explore, new technologies, new dynamics, but they're also looking for entertainment. And so what you see a commonality is that games have been very much that first level into this like bottom of the pyramid, you could say. Folks who don't have a lot of money to spend right now because of GDP per capita, but they're hungry, they're willing to learn, and they're looking for entertainment. So what we saw is that games, for example, we saw Free Fire, we see at VNG, we have all these mobile games that they have. A lot of them also, you can think about it as they started out not necessarily with laptops that happen in the West, but like leapfrogging technology-wise to mobile phones. And so a lot of the games that were designed for the West also did not translate well for local cultural norms and preferences, but also the fact that it's a different form factor, right, which is mobile phones, but also a low internet speed. And so these are the dynamics that made it so that games couldn't transplant from the West, you could say, to Southeast Asia or to China, wherever it is. And so a lot of these unicorns today actually start out, like you said, as games. It's not because, oh, some very huge intentional strategy, but it was because the product that made sense 10 years ago. And then what's happened, of course, is that as you work with this large user base of players who are all engaged, now they are starting to work more, earn more money, set up families, do business with one another. Then obviously, I think you as a game publisher kind of take a step back and say, okay, what else can I do? I have the capability in terms of my workforce to be able to design for them, websites, conversion, I have their user data, I know their name, I know their birthday, I know their home address. And so I think it's quite natural, for example, to think about all the other adjacent growth paths that we see, right? So messaging is a function that's within the games, and then they become externalized and they become messaging apps. We see microtransactions and way payments that eventually become in-house under their own in-house financial function. E-commerce, right, which is a function of these previous two dynamics coming together and bring on suppliers. So I think these are what I call organic growth paths. And so I think when you talk about the story of Tencent, you talk about VNG, you talk about C Group, they actually have some similar dynamics where these business lines are complementary to one another in a non-obvious way if you were coming from, say, America or from Europe. But it makes a lot more sense when you're thinking about the demographics and where the region was 10 years ago.
I think it's very interesting. There was so much buzz about VNG going to conquer the entire Southeast Asia. And then it slumped for a period. Could you share a little bit about why the fervor or the excitement for VNG declined a little bit?
I think that for every country that is in Southeast Asia, the truth is Southeast Asia is not a very organizable entity. It's not like America where, for example, if you take a couple hour flight from one place to another place, from Boston and New York, it's the same language, it's the same set of religions, it's the same set of population, there's a lot of mobility, the workforce, there's a federal workforce, obviously some city laws, but you know, generally, you know, it's the same, you know, not, you know, US Northeast, right? But if you look at, say, Vietnam to Thailand, yeah, sure, it's technically a short flight, but it's just a totally different country with different populations, different demographics, different GDP per capita, actually, which is quite significant. Thailand has a pretty high GDP per capita within Southeast Asia, along with Malaysia. So Singapore's the highest, Malaysia and Thailand are the second tier, and then Vietnam, Indonesia, and then Philippines below that, right? So I think this is the facts of what it is. And so GDP per capita is a simple fact, right? Which is the higher and richer each individual person is, then the more disposable income, the more assets they have to deploy, and so forth. But there's all these other things, right? Let alone regulation or economics or local businesses. So I think, first of all, I think what I want to say is that every company in Southeast Asia, pretty much whether you're in Singapore, Indonesia, Vietnam, you're just going to go wake up in the morning and say, okay, I made it work in my country. I would like to expand to another country. But let's be super real. It's hard, right? And it's hard for small companies and it's hard for large companies. And I think it's totally fair, I think, for expansion to be aware of that. So I don't think we should really necessarily ding them for not expanding to another country, if that makes sense. I think we just basically said, hey, all of us in the whole venture capital and startup ecosystem has realized, like, hey, instead of saying, should we expand or not? It's more, if we have $10 million, $100 million of investment capital, what is the best ROI for that investment, right? Is that going to be, for example, in building in VNG scenario, right? Building out adjacent product lines that help to continue to reinforce each product's defensibility, but also help us then monetize different aspects of the same user, right? Across different products. And I think it's a super fair way to think about it, because now you take a step back in today's world where capital and investment capital is scarce. I think the moves towards more profitability, more revenue synergies within Vietnam means that it didn't take on a very huge cost of expanding to a new country where they had to fight some local incumbent, but also rebuild the whole investor wheel from scratch across the user base and information and products to become much more of a successful flywheel within Vietnam. Historically, there have not been Vietnamese companies that have managed to go public in the US due to a function of, one, I think the technology ecosystem is just maturing right now. So that's something that is a natural progression of time, that VNG is one of the few companies that's large enough, obviously now, and grown fast enough to be able to list. And secondly, there's actually a set of Vietnamese government regulations that historically have made it difficult for Vietnamese companies to go public on a US stock exchange, or at least outside Vietnam. And so I think it's good because by VNG being this first mover, it's also pioneering, I think, the discussions with the local regulators and stakeholders. And that's clearing the path for future Vietnamese companies that are smaller. Maybe their enterprise value of $500 million, $100 million, $10 million. But at least now, hopefully, there's more of a path where there is an exit path to the US stock market. And if that's true, then what that means is that as a result, more growth stage venture capital can enter the Vietnam ecosystem, because now they feel like they can go to the US stock exchange. And then more middle stage, and therefore more early stage venture capital start to enter Vietnam. So this is actually part of a virtuous cycle that was starting to happen. And this is actually the start of what I hope is one of many IPOs from the Vietnamese technology ecosystem.
Yeah, I think it's very inspiring.
Yeah.
And with that, actually, we have come to the end. Thank you, Jeremy, for joining us.
Cool.
And being a part of Empires.
Great hanging out with you always.
If you want to learn more about our guests, you can find their link in our description. In the next episode of Empires, we'll explore Grab. Known formerly as the Uber of Southeast Asia, it has now evolved to become a super app. As of now, it is the only super app that truly has a foothold across the region. See you next week.